Golf Smarter number 610 is brought to you by Ledbury. If you care about how you look and feel, then order a high-quality dress shirt at ledbury.com/golfsmarter and save 20% off your first order. And stay tuned at the end of this episode to hear how you can win a swing coach club and video review lesson from our next guest. Stop complaining that you lifted your head. Top 50 teacher Dean Reinmuth will explain how to fix your swing speed and tempo.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing stories, tips, and insights from great golf minds to help you lower your score and raise your golf IQ. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter podcast, Dean.
Hey, Fred. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much. And thank you for agreeing to talk to me on video. This is always a little more fun to be able to look right at the person. It's distracting, but it's fun to be able to look at you. And clearly you have a face for television. You're used to being on screen.
I was going to say that's the difference between television and radio.
Right. I got the face for radio, buddy.
Well, you know, mine's working its way there. How's that?
You've been a golf instructor for quite a while, and
yes,
one that's high profile golf instructor.
Yes.
Did you intend to get onto the mass teaching side, or did you just want to be able to be a teacher? How did you get to be to this point?
Well, that's an interesting question. I actually, when I went down, my mentor and longtime great friend is Bob Toski. Mm-hmm. And I met Bob only because I asked for his help many, many years ago. There's not a broadcast or an interview that goes by when I don't mention him. And I actually saw him at the PGA show this last year, and we had kind of a love fest up at the top. I was telling a story about Bob with Bob Carney of Golf Digest, and Bob Toski walks by up on top, and it was the funniest. Timing was amazing. And so I had seen Bob, and he was the, you know, king of the coaching back then with Golf Digest, and kind of the guy that started the way for us, really, as teachers. Mm-hmm. So I saw Bob, and I thought, you know, if I don't make it as a player, teaching would be kind of fun if you can do it and do it like he kind of does it, which is to have a little bit of fun when you're on the range and play with people and laugh and not just sit there and be really stiff. So I actually looked at that as an opportunity later in my life. I didn't know when that would occur. When I first started coaching, I became good here locally. I had a young junior girl who won 11 tournaments one summer, and I taught two. One was the PGA Section Player of the Year, and his brother actually qualified for the Open twice. So I had started to make a local foothold. And then I said, well, if I really want to do this on a large scale, I'm going to have to get out to a bigger audience.
Hmm.
I mean, somehow I have to get into the media. And so I reached out to a couple magazines. Golf Magazine printed my first article, which was Take a Swing at Tension, that subsequently became my book, and video was Tension Free Golf. So I had a good response, a really good response from that. And then ultimately I went to Bob, and I'd been trying to get on Golf Digest staff for many years and I couldn't get on. And I went to Bob and asked him one spring over at the Vintage Club. And I said, you know, I've been writing letters to them for years and years, and all I get is the same answer, which is, we'll keep it on file.
Yeah.
Which means
thank you very much for the letter.
The file's circular, and it's you know, good luck. About 2 weeks later, I get a phone call from Golf Digest, Andy Nussbaum at the time, and he said, you know, would you be interested? Because I told Bob I'd been working hard and nothing was happening, and I get a call, and he said, would you still be interested in teaching, you know, at a Golf Digest junior schools? I said, yeah, what do you think? Got off the phone, called Bob immediately, said, thanks. He said, for what? I didn't do anything. I said, oh, yeah, sure. 9 years of my letters, and all of a sudden, mine hit the top, right? So I went there. I ended up meeting Phil there, Mickelson, and I obviously coached Phil for 13 years, and we had a really good run together.
That'll do it. That'll put you at the top of the fold, huh?
And then I started doing I was invited to be the keynote speaker at many of the major teaching summits. The first one was actually in Malaga, Spain. They invited me over to be the keynote there. Then I did Japan. I did Europe. I did Korea. Taught the president of Korea. Taught the president Trump. I played golf with him. Taught Clinton. over in Spain, taught President Bush and Ford.
Wow.
I meant President Ford, not Bush, when he was with President Bush. So, you know, it's been a very interesting career. And what you find out is that when it comes to golf, all people are the same. They want to play better.
Oh,
and they can't figure out why they can't get something accomplished, you know, and how do I get there? That's really the thing that bonds everybody together is it's a complicated and difficult sport to learn, but it's great fun.
Yeah.
And we all share the same thing. Even the best tour players struggle. So, you know, I've struggled recently and it's just now coming back.
Oh, I'm going to want to get into that. But it happens all the time. Well, no, if you're struggling, I want help. I want to know where you are. And it's like, what am I looking forward to? But I get that all the time. People are like, oh, do you play golf? Well, I wouldn't call it golf. You know, it's like, but I suck. Okay, so, you know, if you watch the tournament this past weekend, you're going to see a couple guys who are being interviewed saying, yeah, I had a bad round. I shot a 69. You know, it's so like every golfer complains. I've actually met one person who told me they're a good golfer. That was my barber. And he's still talking. He won't stop talking.
and he's still that good, right?
And he's still that good. Hasn't played in 2 years, but he's still shooting par. You know, I mean,
right.
And he'll be the first to tell you. I love it.
Yeah. Put some money down and let's see him talk then.
Yeah, right, exactly. See ya. So
that's right.
Did you find that you were you know, you were writing more, you were doing more TV appearances and whatnot, more than coaching? And did you prefer that, the media side versus the coaching side?
I was never one that wanted to spend all day just giving lessons. Mm-hmm. What I wanted to do was I wanted to take people and accomplish a target, a goal. I'll give you an example. When Phil and I worked 1 year, I was behind the 18th green with him and Robert, and we'd been working. He was in college, and Robert Gomez won. And he said, "Well, I'll back that up." 1 year, he came to me and said, "You know, I'm really not good at match play." And I said, "You know, match play is different than stroke play." And so we went out and played, and I said, "I could hang with you in match play, but in stroke play, I can't." Because if I make a mistake in stroke play, it might cost me two or three shots somewhere, and it's harder for me to make that up. But in match play, it's only one. Plus, match play is kind of a emotional strategy game, which is where's your opponent, where are you? You know, technically, the opponent's never out of the hole because they may come out with some crazy shot, and all of a sudden they're back in it.
Yeah, it's golf.
And you thought they were done, right?
Right.
So we were behind the 18th green, and Robert wins the tournament. But Phil said, you know, can you believe this? He just won. And I said, well, sure. Yeah. I mean, you can do the same thing. And he looked at me and said, really? I said, yeah. Now, he's in college. And Robert was older than Phil was. And I said, you know, well, the key thing is you have to learn to make 14 pars, 4 birdies, 4 days in a row. That's the goal. Then you're at 16 under. And if you do that, see what happens. The next year, he wins the Tucson Open at 16 under, and we were driving back from Tucson to Phoenix. And he says, Dean, guess what won? I said, 16 under. He said, yeah, 14 pars, 4 birdies, 4 days in a row. I completely forgot that total would total up to 16 under when we were, you know, really talking about it. So it's really about the interest of taking anyone's goal and achieving that. I had a friend of mine here at the Crosby and Larry Scholey. I'm sorry, Larry Simon. And Larry was really struggling. He almost wanted to quit the game. And he had the shanks and, you know, just wasn't playing good. And I took him on as a student, and he got down into the 70s. And yet he was going to quit the game. So to me, it was about taking people and doing things, especially for media, to show people that you really can get better. There are ways to do that. The way you're using may not get you there, but there is a strategy to getting you there.
Interesting. What do you think gave you greater notoriety? And I mean notoriety as far as attention, not like, hey, there is Dean. Was it the media exposure or was it being Phil's coach?
Oh, no. Well, there's no question. I mean, they're so interconnected. It's hard to separate. Oh, okay. Obviously, Phil's success helped me. Sure. But if you look now, if you don't have a following of what message you're trying to send. So when the Golf Channel hit and I grew with the Golf Channel and had huge followings of people and did the teaching summits, you have to have something that has value to people or it won't work. You know, media is only an outlet to getting to more people. So you have to have good product. And if your product's not any good and you put it on television or anything else, it'll fail.
So what was the message?
Well, the message is really a simple understanding, kind of a logical explanation, understanding of how you can play better. What can you do as a person at home who hears me or gets information from me to help you? Which is exactly why when the swing coach came along, it wasn't named that at the time, didn't have a name. But as I worked with it, it started to give me some understanding that there is and there are some instructional aids or help mechanisms for people that really can help you a bit. You know, alignment things like that, they can. There are a lot of them that can't or that don't really work for a broad-based audience, but that's kind of how that worked, because I didn't really use many of these things at the time. I still don't, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never been a huge fan until I got this in the mail. I'm like, okay, now this is interesting.
Yeah, and I'm
so
not.
So this
know,
is the
I'm
swing not, coach that he's talking about, and we're gonna get into this a little bit more and what it means for you and how it can help you. But
and I've never been one to I've never been one to hawk products. I mean, I've endorsed very few things in my career, so mm-hmm. I was never one that just endorsed and put my name behind anything. I'm out here at the Crosby and Rancho Santa Fe, and I represented Princeville and a couple others, but I didn't look like a billboard, so right. to speak, just because right. for me it was about doing a few things really well.
You do realize you're wearing a billboard on your head.
I do that.
As you yeah. say that yeah, I'm because, not a billboard, but it says Wilson Staff across
yeah, okay,
your forehead.
I go like that. How's that?
With the Ashcroft on your shoulder.
That's what they would say, a bad hair day.
Yeah, okay. That counts. So if you want to help people get better, how do you do that on a broad scale? Right? I mean, if you want to work right. with people one-on-one, that's one message for each person. Right. But how do you have the same message in golf for everybody?
Well, and that's the thing is if you give them an understanding of certain key components that make up a good swing, mm-hmm. that helps people. Mm-hmm. Okay, so take for example, when you make a practice swing, how many practice swings does it take you before you get what you would consider your best practice swing? Forget hitting the ball, just you going through your database of feelings and going, yeah, I don't like that one, and I don't like that one, I like that one. Okay, so that's step one.
Okay.
And that's just hitting your best shots more often without any instruction at all. That's more a mental focus of your capability of what feels like to you your best swing. Obviously, you can tell what doesn't feel good. The question is, can you take what does feel good and then use that over the ball and see how the ball reacts when you do that? So what will happen is this. You might take sometimes one practice swing and it's the right one. The next time it may take three, and then sometimes it might take five. But most people don't even dig to find their best swing in their own head. They just go up to the ball, they see a number, they see the target, they swing and hit it.
Right.
Well, if you can't make a good practice swing, how are you going to make a good swing over the ball
right.
very often? Right.
Right. Right.
That's an odds thing, not a skill thing. That's, well, what are your best odds? Well, my best odds are I'm going to make a good practice swing. I'll take that and try to duplicate that over the ball and see what happens. So then that's, in essence, what a good player does. The difference is that their best swing is more refined in their head. It has they have a better sense of what is correct and what works and one that doesn't. The average person will take a practice swing, and then when they get over the ball, they'll speed it up or they'll change it, one or the other.
Right.
Well, then you're not even, if you were building a house that way and you had blueprints and you didn't build it according to the blueprints, well, then you didn't follow the directions, right? Well, what if you tried to build a house without blueprints? You have no idea what you're doing. So if you take that concept to golf, that's exactly what happens.
Or as a TV producer would say, was trying to do that without a script. Yeah,
right.
We won't
exactly.
go there.
No, but that's true. They just didn't know that I could do it without a script.
I've seen it happen many, many times where someone who will take a practice swing, like, nah, that didn't work, because they chunked the ground.
Right.
They did it again, and it's like, oh, no, that didn't work, and for whatever reason, and like, oh, okay, that's what I want to do. Mm-hmm. But then they go up to the ball, and they don't really know what it, they know it felt good, but they don't know how to repeat that, right?
Right. Well, there's two parts. There's what we call thinking and feeling.
Okay.
Now, if you look at the definition in the dictionary between the two, they're completely different. A thought versus a feel. The thought is in the conscious mind. The conscious mind is about 12% of the brain, and it analyzes, criticizes, and makes decisions. The subconscious has the sensory modes. It smells, touch, feel, sound, those kinds of things. So what happens, you do the analysis of a shot and say, okay, I want to hit this kind of shot. Then you take a practice swing until you get the feeling of what the movement is that you like, which is like a high processing speed with a computer, and all kinds of things are going on at the same time. It's not one dimensional. And then you repeat that feeling over the ball. The question is, one, is that feeling technically your best, you know, correct? It might be your best swing, but maybe that's a kind of a banana slice into the middle of the fairway. But at least you're playing your best shots, but it doesn't improve your best shots because the technique is incorrect. You understand that part?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if a person, let's say, is shooting 90 and they're average shooting 90, and then they shoot 110 someday. Well, obviously, they're not getting their best shots more often. But doing this doesn't necessarily take a person who's a 90 skill set and make them shoot mid-70s because they don't have the skill set yet because the technique is incorrect. So that's where the next step is. So say the first step is get you coordinated with your body. You take a practice swing. You take it until you get a good feeling for one. And then you copy that over the ball at the same speed, same length. You don't change anything. That itself is not an easy step because most people aren't attuned to that. The second part is if that gives you a 100-yard drive or 150-yard drive down the middle of the fairway and you want to hit the ball 200 down the middle of the fairway, then you're going to have to make some kind of a change to what you're doing in order to get that result. That's the second part, which is the retraining. So the first part is what you're currently doing. The second part is the retraining to get to a better skill set so that you make a better swing that's more efficient, which hits the ball farther.
When you're trying to break 100 or even 90, let's keep it up at that point, before we get into the 80s and the 70s, are we talking about struggling more with course management than swing mechanics?
In the early stages, you're really talking about, can you make a reasonable swing without getting overly nervous in the conditions of a golf course? You know, there's the driving range is your first place, which is you have to get comfortable making a swing. Then you have to get comfortable making a swing when there's a ball in front of the club face. Then you have to get comfortable being out in the element. Example. I took a ski lesson for the first time when I was, it would have been about 52 years old.
You're okay? A brave man.
Yeah, well, let's put it this way. I had a whole lot of kids on the bunny slope that kept saying, come on, move over, old man, you're going too slow.
Because you were terrified.
That's exactly right. So, yeah, so I didn't want to fall over, see?
Sure.
And I didn't know what I was doing, so I was going slow. Well, The fact is that I was still in the skill learning development stage. So that's where most people are. And the problem is that then they end up swinging too fast. Well, when he took me and put me out on the slope when there were people around, I was afraid that I was going to run into people. Mm-hmm. And the people going by me down the slope were scaring me. You know, it made me nervous that they'd come so close to me. Well, they weren't that close for a good skier, but they were close for me. So learning in that stale, kind of stale environment is a big issue. most people don't do that. They go and hit range balls and they go play, and they're playing at freeway time, you know, which is rush hour, Saturday morning, Sunday morning, you know, people are coming by. Nobody wants to get, you know, run over basically by everybody else. So it's not really the way to learn something. If you go out and you say, okay, first step, take your practice swing, learn, and I'm going to condense this down to kind of a step-by-step here for you.
Thank you.
So if you go out right now, you take a practice swing, and you try to make the best one you can, count and see how many practice swings, and do a rep of 10. So you do one rep, and you say, okay, I'm going to take some practice swings, see how long it takes me to get a good feeling one. Then you stop. Don't do another one. Just let it wait for a bit, then try it again. And then you do it again. And then you go do something, you know, make a phone call, do some paperwork, come back out, try it again. Because the time lapse between the first practice swing and the second one makes it harder to find the second one. If you do it right away, it's easy to find.
Sure.
That's like the do-over mulligan swing. That's why that works.
We call that a second swing All-American.
That's right. It's the do-over. Yeah, it's a do-over championship. All right. But that's why that works, because the recall, the mind, it's already up on the front part of the mind. So it says, oh, this is what I want to do, right? And it gets confident with that. But as you let time go by, now you have to go back and find it. Well, golf requires time to go by, and you have a new shot. So you have to go through that process. And when you're just in skill development stage, that's why that bunny slope is one pitch. It's not a bunch of bumps and humps and all kinds of stuff. It's just an angle down the hill. And so you can work on your skill. So that's where that comes from.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And most people don't do that. The average person plays more than they practice. The average professional practices more than they play in any sport.
No question about it. And I think that, you know, this is a conversation that happens frequently on this program, is that life gets in the way of golf.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
I mean, I'll get emails regularly from people going, well, I just had my second kid. I don't think I'm going to be able to play golf for the next 13 or 14 years at best.
Right.
And, you know, we all complain about how long golf takes and how much it is and how hard it is. But the time factor, and as much as they're doing and trying to do to cut the amount of time on the golf course, it's going to be hard to have much success with that without cutting out the number of holes that people are playing.
No, well, that's right. Yeah, exactly. So the important is first get we're going to condense this down to something that helps the people listening. The first thing is to have a kind of a game plan. All right. One, do a chart, take 6 practice swings, but separate them in time so they're not back to back to back. So you're going to have 6 separate times in which you're going to try this. And you let at least 10 minutes go between each time.
Mm-hmm.
You use the same club. Monitor yourself and how many swings it takes in order to get your best feeling swing. That's going to be the first step.
I'm with you.
Okay. Second,
you're looking at me like we are doing this on video, so people should go check this out. I'm waiting.
Yeah.
So you definitely should check this out on video on our YouTube channel to watch this conversation.
Sometimes Skype freezes up, so you were like stuck, and I didn't know if you were still there. So anyway, that's the first step. Then the second step is, after you do that and you chart that a few times, what you want to do is go to the driving range, take the same club, tee the ball up. So we're not dealing with it on the ground. We're just dealing with the fact that a ball is there. Take your practice swings before you're going to hit the ball and see if you're finding the swing you like, this at about the same rate or average that you were finding before. So maybe it's not the first one, maybe it's not second, but the third one. And it's not, oh, I can't find it, I can't find it, I can't find it. Then take that swing and go over the ball and try to implement that same feeling, no tightening, no speeding up, same fluid motion, same finish, over the ball. I don't care where it goes. You could top it. It doesn't matter. So you just see if you can accomplish that much. And if you can, then you can move to the next step. But if you can't, then you have to stay at that step to say, look, if I can find the practice swing I like, I'm going to have to be able to use, at least use that over the ball. If my body tightens up and jerks and pulls on it and twists it, then I'm doing something different. Typically, people will speed up the practice swing. They get more anxious because they're still trying to hit the ball. And that hit impulse is what gets it becomes the problem. And that's one of the reasons, and we'll talk about this with swing coach, but that's one of the reasons I like the swing coach, because it takes the hit impulse away. It's strictly based on the physics of movement because the ball's already attached to the face itself. So you don't have that instinct where your body wants to tighten up. Like if I ask you to chip off the putting green, and you try to hit a chip off the putting green, right as you get in your impact, your body's going to want to hiccup because it doesn't want to take a divot in the putting green, right?
Right.
That's a yip. That feeling is either comes from a concern of making contact or from a big increase of speed when you're trying to hit it hard. That distorts the flow of energy of the swing. And so the reason that I liked the swing coach in the beginning was because when it's attached, all you're doing is creating inertia or motion to see if the swing motion or acceleration is coming from the proper direction and the proper speed and things like that. So it's literally how you're driving your car. Now, once you're able to take the practice swing that you like and use it when the ball's in front of your eyes and you're not getting a hiccup, that will tell you whether the practice swing feeling you're using is actually correct or not. Realize that that practice swing is the swing you own in your subconscious mind. It's not something I put there. It's not something anyone else puts there. It's what you as the teacher have put there. And I've always said this, there's always two teachers and one student in a lesson. There's me teaching you who's teaching you.
Right.
And so I have to be able to set up the connection between your mind and your body. And then I have to understand how your teacher's, you know, thinking and what it knows about golf swing and about your body and how it's reacting. Mm-hmm. So I've got a young kid, Chris, who comes out here, he's a baseball player. And he's just getting started wanting to play golf. He wants to play at a high level. Well, he's got
the baseball swing, yeah.
Uh-huh. And it's one that it contracts because he's trying to hold back from the ball pushing the bat back. So he's used to tightening up and keeping that pressure at impact. Well, that causes a problem in golf.
Yeah.
So, but he has a hard time changing the connection, what we call the neuromuscular pathway from the brain out to the muscles. That pathway is what we deal with. And that's really what you have to start out in the very beginning. And once you have that and you take those, say, six swings, if it took you an average of three good practice swings to find your best one, now you put the ball in front of your eyes. Are you still at three before you can implement the good practice swing over the ball or not?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that sets a pattern of something that's really important, which is how do you teach you? That's the critical component part of all of this. I can teach you about the swing, but if I can't teach you how to teach yourself, how to talk to yourself and communicate to your body to get your body to respond, it reminds me of this friend of mine when we went to Tijuana when I first moved here. We went down there and we went in a store and he goes up to the guy and he says, "How much is that?" And the guy looks at him and says, "No comprende, señor." He says, "No, how much is that?"
Get louder and slower.
He says, "No comprende, señor." So then he goes back at him one more time. He goes, "How much is that?" And he points at it. He goes, "No comprende, señor." So the other guy in the store comes up to him and taps on his shoulder. He says, "Listen," he says, "he's not deaf. He's not dumb. He doesn't understand English. It won't matter how loud you yell or how slow you pronounce the words. He doesn't understand what you're saying." So that's literally the subconscious and our own subconscious and conscious relationship, which is how are we communicating to our body what we are trying to get our body to do? That's the big step. The other step is the person who's communicating, does he even know how to communicate? I mean, if he says left and he means right, that's a big problem.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So if you say, you know, "I want to do this with my body," but it's the wrong technical thing, then you're teaching your body to do it incorrectly. So you're not going to get the correct results.
So interesting.
So those are the two levels that I focus on. I focus on first, do you really know what your swing is doing? or is your analysis wrong? Uh-huh. Because if your analysis is wrong, everything you do after that is wrong.
Yeah.
Because you started out with the wrong premise. You know, years ago, I was at the PGA show, and there was it was called Swing Dynamics, and it was a computer system that would tell you I think it was based off of Jim McLean's X Factor. And they were trying to determine if the X Factor was what really gave you distance. Okay. And so they set this thing up according to the X Factor. So they strap you up, they put this thing across like this, and you know, and you stand there. And I said, okay, so let me check this out. So the target is over to that side, and I turn this way, face this way, and I'm going to hit a ball backwards at the target. So I said, right now, what's my X factor? He said, zero. I said, right now, what's my X factor? He said, zero. I said, what's my X factor when I got the impact? Zero. And because my body was turned at a different angle to the computer mechanism, it couldn't read it correctly, right? Uh-huh. And so when I did that, I hit it 230 yards that way. And it had zero X factor. He says, well, how can you have that? That doesn't make sense to me. I said, well, it does to me, because what you did was you took a hypothesis and took the hypothesis and tried to take the hypothesis and turn it into fact.
Okay.
Big difference.
Big difference. Big right. difference. And you know, and so often people are like, okay, I figured out what was wrong with me. I was lifting my head. And it's okay. Like, yeah, really? You think that's it? Because why? Because somebody said that on TV and you think that's going to, I don't know if that's your problem.
Right. Well, that's exactly right. You know, in anything in medicine, if you look at medicine as a different dynamic than us, they take a surgical procedure and they test it. Once they have the surgical procedure refined, then it's put out into the domain of surgeons to utilize as the mechanism to use. Now, based on a criteria, they do that. The golf doesn't really do it that way. They just try things. Mm-hmm. They don't have necessarily what you'd call a program which says this is how you analyze this. This is how you do this. It's kind of like a Maverickville. You know, everybody kind of goes to seminars, you learn and you try to learn and you kind of go off and do your own thing, right? So it's a big difference in how we teach than how they do things. They use one system. We have many. I mean, there was the guy that came down here for the swing coach. I forgot his name. You mentioned him earlier about the podcast.
Oh, yeah. Be Better Golf.
Be Better Golf. So he came down because I told Chris, I said, you know, have him come down. Let me show him. He doesn't understand what he's doing. And that's why that's why the product's not working for him. Mm-hmm. And when he got down here,
I saw that video of him trying to hit one with a pro.
Right.
And
yeah. Exactly. But see, he couldn't self-assess what his swing was doing.
Right.
But the swing coach actually tells you based on physics that your swing is doing something it doesn't feel like it's doing. Mm-hmm. And that's really the hardest part of golf. Well, you were mentioning this, and I mentioned about me. My problem was always when I was younger this is why I went to Toski, because I could hit every club except my driver, and I would duck hook my driver. From time to time, it would just come out of nowhere, and I had no idea where it was coming from. And I tried everything. We didn't have video. You know, we had a Polaroid 8-step camera and stuff like that. But there's no way, you know, Polaroid must have made a lot of money on the film, because we could never capture what we were looking for and just roll it, you know, just keep buying it and keep trying. You know, so that lack of ability to assess what the problem was when I was playing caused a problem in lack of trust.
Okay.
Because I didn't know what shot I was going to get. I used to say, you know, how'd you hit it? Well, it could be good, or it could be like a Clint Eastwood movie, good, bad, and ugly. And I didn't know which player was going to show up. So, but I didn't have that with short wedges. I didn't have it with chipping, putting, bunker shots. I mean, none. Just when I got to driver. So my lack of ability to be able to define what the problem or the issue was so that I could then go train it was the real problem. And until I could assess and find the problem, my training was just trying stuff to see if I could figure out something, right? Mm-hmm. If I could have defined the problem, which I now know what it was, when I was younger, I had a book called Hogan's Five Fundamentals of Golf. And in the book, about the third, maybe fourth chapter, somewhere in there, it says you can't, I forget how to say it, you can't turn your left hip too fast. I used to say fast enough. It's one of the two. And I got really good at turning my hips. I got so good that by the time I, when I was in high school, by the time I got the impact, my body was over here and the club was over here somewhere.
Oy.
And so it was what we would call now stuck behind me. Then the club had to flip over. So that's what caused the issue, but I didn't know it, so I couldn't change it. And that's a big part of what makes it hard for people to play better, is because they don't really know what it is they're doing. So there's only a couple ways to do that. You can go to a coach, and the coach can assess it. Now you have to, you know, hopefully the coach does assess it correctly and put can put a person on a path that says, here's how you fix that.
Right.
But if the assessment is wrong, then all the work that you're doing is wrong.
Yeah.
And if you if the coach does do that and you don't follow the approach, because when you get out there and you're playing, all of a sudden you start going through that laundry list in your own head saying, well, that didn't work. Let me try this, because you only tried it for like 3 days. Then that's the other problem.
And we had a guy in, or you went right from the practice to the lesson right to the golf course going, I'll working on it while out there.
Right. I have a lesson.
It doesn't 11. Work. I'm not going to do it anymore.
Yeah. By I have the a ninth lesson hole. At 11 and they got a $5 Nassau at 12.
Yeah.
And and it didn't work.
It didn't work.
Okay, so now it's the coach's fault.
Right, exactly.
No. Yeah, there's two parties here. One is the coach and the other is the player. And the player bears responsibility for the fact that they didn't do it.
No, no, no. It's the coach's fault.
Yeah. You see, well, here's a really funny story. So Toski one time told me to take because I couldn't aim. He told me to take a golf club head, break the head off, pinch the shaft, stick it in the ground. So he had just the shaft and the grip.
Okay.
And he'd take it and he'd put it, and he said, put it in the ground at an angle like this. And then have your eyes look from the ball up here, up to the target. And he said, that'll help teach you how to aim, because you don't aim properly. So I went home and I came back and saw him several months later. And I, you know, go out on the driving range. I put the club in the ground. And I'm hitting golf balls, and he comes walking over. And, you know, Toski is not shy. So he comes over to me and he says, what the hell's that? So what that? And he's pointing at this thing on the ground. I go, that? He goes, yeah, that. What is that? I said, well, you told me to do that. He says, I know, but why would you listen to me? No one else ever has.
Great story. Great story. All right, let's take a couple minutes because, I say these things are going to go 30 minutes, and I rarely do that. But let's take a couple minutes if we can.
Sure.
And talk about the swing coach. Now, you're not a big proponent of swing aids.
No.
I never have been, and yet I've been told about this through you.
Right.
Okay? And I'm holding it up to the camera here.
I want to couch that with something. This isn't just because of this, because when this product first came to me, I turned it down.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. They sent me something. I said, there's an idea here, but it doesn't work.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know what, I can't spend the time. And, so then... 6 or 8 months later, I got a call from which now the president of the company, Chris Chamberlain, and he said, you tested that the swing coach out that Bill had sent you, Bill Parks, who was the inventor. And I said, he said, what'd you think? And I said, well, there's something there, but I said, it just wasn't working. And I really couldn't figure it out. He said, well, we're thinking about putting it into the market and kind of upgrading it. Would you take a look at it? So I said, yeah, I'll take a look at it again. So I took it, and I started to play with it a little bit. I took it up to a friend of mine in Los Angeles, and he has a friend named Rodney Jerkins. Rodney Jerkins is a very famous producer of music, and his son's a good young player. So we went up there, and I said, I just want to test it with some people. And I'd been working with it a little bit, and it started to work better here at the house. And his son took a swing with it. And you know how the prongs are in that front, the little cradle thing we talk about?
Yeah.
The blue thing?
Yeah.
Okay, so he didn't know that you weren't supposed to just swing at it and hit it. So he swung and hit the ball and broke one of the cradles. He broke it. So it would turn, right?
Uh-huh.
So I brought it home. I called Chris and I said, well, you just broke the cradle and I don't know what I'm going to do. He said, I'm going to think about it. So I woke up at about 2:30 in the morning and I took that cradle and I turned it so that you see how the prongs are up. They're not parallel with the shaft plane now.
Right. Right.
Well, those prongs used to be parallel to the shaft plane.
Oh, okay.
Exactly. So everything that came off like you were on a 45 degree slope, way dead left.
Uh-huh.
Because it was like a side hill lie.
Sure.
And I did the first one. I think I went out in the parking lot, you know, out in the street somewhere. But so I broke that and I turned it more up the swing plane line, which would go up over your shoulders. And I gaff taped it in place. And I went out in the back of my backyard. I have a practice area. And I went out and I started to use it. And I said, that's where the problem is. So I called Bill and I said, why did you do this, the shaft plane line? He says, well, you know, you read about the shaft plane line. Yeah, but that's not what, you know, you would
that's
make this
flight.
For.
Yeah.
No, it wouldn't work relative to the swing. That's like a, you know, pull hook all the time. That's what you've been trying to avoid. And so I started to work with that. And then that's when we started to build the actual product because it started to function correctly. And so if you made a swing that was outside in or the speed was late, the ball goes left. If you made a swing where the speed was out too early or it was too much inside out, the ball would go out to the right. And so it was now starting to give you, you know, real physics. So I want you to do this. Now here's how the prongs work. Make a fist like this.
Okay.
And you take your fingers and just, this is like the equator of a golf ball right here.
Okay.
Put your fingers just on the other side of the equator.
Which are your knuckles.
That's right.
As you make the fist.
Your knuckles. Now pull your left hand out.
There's resistance.
You feel that resistance.
Sure.
Okay, so now put it just right on top of the knuckles.
Okay.
And now pull it out.
And it just slides right out.
Less resistance, right?
Of course.
So the ball, when it sits in the cradle, has a different force holding power against the golf ball.
I'm reaching back and getting a golf ball, too.
No problem. So when you put the ball in there, put the ball in the cradle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you look at it, how much of the prong is over the equator or over your knuckles?
It's lightly. Right.
Barely,
it's not even reaching the equator of the ball.
Right. Now, is the spacer in the center of the cradle?
The black spacer right here? Yes,
right.
It is.
Okay. So the reason we created the spacer was for a short pitch shot because it won't hold the ball with much strength. Right?
Oh, okay.
Okay. Now take the spacer out.
And this little rubber piece comes right out.
Right. Now put the ball in.
Uh-huh. And the ball. And now it's on the equator.
And it goes in deeper, right?
Right.
Right. So as it goes in deeper, that means your swing speed has to get up to maximum speed for that cradle at a certain point in the downswing arc,
mm-hmm.
which is what then releases the ball. If you don't get up to speed by the bottom of the arc, that ball will not come out. It's like an airplane that's going down the runway too slow. It won't take off.
Right.
And so then what happens, and this is what causes the ball to go left for a lot of people, is they think that they're hitting maximum speed at the bottom of the arc when most of the time they're hitting maximum speed after they've hit the ball.
So if you think
of the club coming down like this, and they should hit the maximum speed right here, they're actually coming down the maximum speeds on this side after impact.
Right.
And they don't realize that because they're using what we call body effort. Their body's turning a lot. But what happens? The club's behind the body.
Right.
So now speed's after impact.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm looking at the camera and I swing back like this, you see how the center of my shirt has turned? So when I started, the center of my shirt was right here.
Okay.
Okay? Right there. Now, when I go back, the center of my shirt's over here. As I come down this way, as soon as that squares up right here, I have to have this going past. If this gets over here, now my hands are behind my chest, and then I go like this, so the speed is actually after impact.
Mm-hmm.
And the swing coach shows that, because that's when you're late with your acceleration. If I go like this, and the speed comes down early, it's like casting.
Right.
And then the ball comes out.
It's going to shoot down.
Shoot down in the ground.
So in watching that Be Better Golf video of these two guys trying it, I got the sense that they didn't read the instructions. They pulled it out of the box and stuck a ball in it and started swinging.
Yep.
And they were not getting any results that they could quantify or even talk about. They just felt like they were not doing it right, which clearly they weren't. So does that mean that this training aid is not that intuitive, that you need instruction to get it right? Or can read the instructions, walk out to the driving range and start throwing balls out there?
Well, you can if you read the instructions, but second, if you go on and look at the videos that are up online, there are some that help. It's not complicated, but the problem that people have is what they feel they're doing versus what they're actually doing, there's a disconnect. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm doing this, I'm doing this. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm aimed at target, I'm aimed 30 yards to the right. Well, why are you aimed 30 yards to the right if you feel you're aimed correctly?
Yeah.
Because your coach, my coach inside for me, we're used to certain patterns of behavior and we believe they're accurate. And every player is the same. You know, I was with Rory Sabatini at the Players' Championship as an example. And he said, you know, every signal it's giving me is that I'm coming outside in. And so I watched him. I said, yeah, Rory, you're actually so far inside that as you come down through impact, your rib cage is turning out and then you're going over the bottom half of the swing. So it's going outside after it gets below waist high coming down. It's not from the top. So he got, watch this. So he got more inside at the first half of the downswing. Then it hit the rib cage. And then the rib cage turned out. And then he went over the bottom half.
Okay.
And the more he tried to go inside as he started down, the worse the bottom half got.
Uh-huh.
And you saw a little bit, you saw a lot of that with Tiger. Now, if you watch Tiger's swing now, and you watch the practice swings he was making, he was actually making a practice swing that was look like an outside-in swing, right? Well, if you look at his actual swing started to mirror the practice swing, which was it was going outside-in.
Mm-hmm.
But before, when he first started doing it, it wasn't. So he overcorrected. And it's easy for good players to overcorrect. And players are either overcorrectors or undercorrectors. You know, we all have one or the other. And those people that are overcorrectors have to be careful not to overdo something.
Sure.
And those that are undercorrectors have to keep pushing to give me a little more of that, right? And so that's the part about learning about how you teach yourself so that just like driving a car down the road, don't oversteer to the left and oversteer to the right. But what about the person that understeers? They're just going this way and they start to make a slow adjustment back and they run into the tree.
Yeah.
So that's what we have to understand about ourselves as players and take that information and say, well, if I'm swinging the swing coach, for example, and the ball's coming out left, let me swing and make the ball come out at the ground. Then I'm accelerating too early. So now I've got what I have in my book, which I called parameters, which is, and I'm going to play this game with you to show you how quick you can learn this.
Uh-oh. All right.
So I have a number in my head, and all I'm going to tell you is if you're too high or too low with a number I have in my head.
Okay.
So you guess a number, but don't tell me. Okay. You got it?
Okay.
Okay. So actually, I'm going to do it the other way. I've got a number in my head.
Okay.
I'll make it hard for you.
Oh, thanks.
I've got a number in my head.
Okay.
And I want you to guess what that number is. And I'm only going to tell you if it's too high or too low. Okay.
So we're not saying it's between 1 and 10 or 1 in 1,000. We're just saying a number.
Too high or too low.
Okay.
That's all I'll tell you.
50.
Too low.
92.
Too low. That was an interesting guess, by the way.
I thought we were going golf.
I'm going to psychoanalysis now. Go ahead. Keep going.
500.
Too low.
2017.
Too low.
10,000.
Too low.
1,000,000.
Too high.
Oh,
so now,
thanks.
It took you how many guesses to get to too high?
5 or 6 or something.
Yeah. And you notice that as you did that, You were interesting because you went between a couple of weird numbers like 2017. And,
well, that's the year. I didn't know. I was trying
oddball numbers. Right. So now you're trying to guess it specific, right?
Yeah.
And so you guessed general, and then you went to, well, let me just try one specific one just to
92.
See if I happen to get lucky.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. And then you said, well, that's not working. So now I'm going to find out where it is. So now I'm going to reverse it. I want you to pick a number.
Okay.
You let me know when you have it. All right.
Okay.
Now. 0.
Too low.
Okay. Now, why did I pick 0?
I don't know.
You could have had a negative number. So I had to block that. So I know it's not negative.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
1,000,000.
Too high.
In two guesses, I already know it's in here somewhere. Right?
No, it's not here. It's
open. Doesn't matter. Yeah. Doesn't matter.
Okay, but okay.
500,000.
Too high.
100,000.
Too high.
50.
Too high.
See how quick I can go. So now I know I'm going the right direction. I've gone from a million to 50. It's between 0 and 50 now in a very short period of time.
Okay. So you've played this game before. That's not fair.
Of course, but I understand the process.
Sure.
You see?
Sure.
So it's everybody can learn it easy.
Okay.
It's just using the process. This swing, it's too fast, too slow. And that's how you, what you call it, trapping. You trap it so it can't go anywhere, so you get calm that it's in here somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So you go far. I was at 50. I went 25.
Too high.
25?
Too high.
All right. 10.
Too high.
5.
Too low. Okay.
So now that's how quick you can get there. But the thing that gives you calmness is you know you're getting closer to it.
Sure.
Not that you found it yet, but that you're getting closer to what you want it to be, right? So when you do that with the swing, you say, well, is this swing too big, too long? This one too small?
Yeah.
Like a putt. Take a 3-foot putt.
Right.
So you're going to putt on different speed greens. So on this speed green, my putting stroke is this long because the green speed is running at 13 or 14.
Right.
Tomorrow, short. I have the same length putt, and the green is running at 8, and my stroke is this big.
Yeah.
So the question is, how are you going to learn how to do that if you don't have some kind of a process where you as the player are going through that data changing all the time? You can't just guess like 2017.
Right, right.
You see, that was a total guess.
Sure.
Versus a process, which was, I'm going to just keep adding a number until he says you're too high. And I'm going to go in bigger chunks and I'm going to get it trapped in here somewhere. So is the swing too long and short? Is it too fast or slow? Is it too jerky or too smooth? Uh-huh. Now, there's an interesting one.
Yeah.
Because too jerky is easy to get to. Too smooth, it's hard to get to somebody saying, well, that swing is just too smooth. I don't really like that one. Right? So that's that. I was talking about the contraction. That's the muscle contraction.
Interesting.
So when your swing is smooth, it feels effortless.
Right.
When it's effortless, it's the one, if you looked at a tour player, how would you describe the swing they make? Give me an adjective.
Smooth.
Smooth, effortless, easy,
sure,
like nothing.
Right.
So you know that the smoother your swing is getting, the more closely aligned you're getting to what you've seen good players do.
Right.
Even if they have unusual technique like a Furyk, his swing still looks smooth.
Yeah.
It just has a lot of different movement to it, right?
Yeah.
And Phil's looks smooth. And Al Geiberger's look smooth. And, you know, so all these players.
I go right to Ernie Els.
Yeah. So all these players have one kind of visual thing that's in common, which is it looks smooth, even though it's a different pattern of movement.
Mm-hmm.
It still doesn't look jumpy or jerky.
Mm-hmm.
So as you do that as a player, you get closer and closer to learning what your natural smooth swing does, which is what people say, well, if you hit your best shots more often, how much better would you play? A lot better.
Sure.
That's without changing anything.
Sure,
that's just taking what you have currently. And that's one of the things I said about swing coach was, because it's not a contraption that's wrapped around you that does attach you, it's just teaching you what your swing is doing currently. And then it can teach you how to adjust that to getting one that's more consistently correct.
Interesting.
That's what it does.
Interesting.
Now, is it a cure-all like one? No, it's not, because nothing is. But is it something that can give you an absolute guide, because it's based on physics, and where I'm just doing something with this computer out here called Eldrick, and we're using the swing coach in, it's like an Iron Byron, but it's mobile, so it can move around. And we're putting the swing coach in there so that time after time, if you put it at the same speed with the same swing, the ball's going to come out the same. And if it changes it, it'll come out exactly like we're talking about, come out too early, too late.
Sure.
So it's, and that takes all the personality out of it, all the emotion out of it. It's just pure physics that makes that happen.
Yeah. And what I hear from you is something that I hear regularly in these conversations, is it's not about the outcome. It's about
the
process.
That's right. And a good player, when you're playing, you say, I just want to put a good swing out. In other words, I want to use the feeling that I have that I think is the best one.
Yeah.
But the average person who plays, The tour player can probably do that about 80 to 85% of the time, all the way through the set. Mm-hmm. If they play lights out, they're probably doing it a little over 90% of the time. But in a general sense, that's kind of the scheme they set in. And that's where the average person has to get to first before they start trying to make other changes.
Awesome.
And so many of those changes have nothing to do with, you know, is my this here, is the that there, is it, you know, all this kind of dissecting type stuff. It really is to build first a better relationship between you as your coach of your body and getting to understand how that works and what you feel is correct. What's it really doing? If I feel this is correct and the ball's coming out down there, obviously the speed is too early because that speed is ejecting the ball coming out. And if it's late and left, that means the speed is too late. Now you research back, well, what's causing it to be too late? What do I start to do and how can I get it to go too early, which is like the number guessing game.
Right, right.
And it's always there. That's what I like about it.
That's great. Thank you. Sure. Tell me about your book. Where can we find it? What is it called?
Books? The book is, no, just have one. I don't have enough info for more than one book.
I'm sure you have more info than for one more than one podcast.
Yeah. No, I have both a book and a video. The Triumph Books put my book out. It's called Tension Free Golf, and my video was called Take a Swing at Tension. But I was young. I did the video in 19. Well, I started the idea in 1977.
Wow,
which is before most people were born.
And before most people had, I don't even think there was a VHS in 1977.
No, I'll tell you a funny story. I had to make two, at that time, I had to make two masters. One was VHS, the other was beta.
Oy. Right.
And the reason they thought Sony was going to use a beta format, which we use in production, but the quality, because of the quality, but the average person at home, the TV wasn't of any quality, it would have mattered anyway.
Oh, yeah. And at the same time, we were going through, should I use 8-track or cassettes?
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah.
Beta,
yeah, exactly.
Or VHS? Beta, right, was a much better product, but VHS was the one that won until, right, DVD.
And so DVD. I had two masters made, and I never sold a single beta, and they were all VHS.
No, yeah. Yeah.
So that's how that goes.
Yep. Yep.
But yeah, no, just at deanofgolf@gmail.com. And the website is deanofgolf.com. Yep.
Okay. deanofgolf.com. And there's videos there.
Yep.
And lots of other.
And also you can reach me through swingcoachclub.com or swingcoach.com.
Okay.
We're going to be doing some live lessons. And we're going to have a program to do some over the internet instruction like this.
Oh, fun. Thank you so much for your time. This has been amazing. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, this is fun. Like I said, this is what I want to be able to do is to reach through a medium like this that doesn't have the restrictions of television segments with commercial breaks and all the restrictions it has. Because when I went to the Golf Channel, the reason I liked it was because you had a 30-minute segment,
right,
of just coaching, which is 22 minutes actual. But you could really accomplish something as opposed to a 3-minute tip,
yeah, right,
which was totally different. Right?
Right. That's what I love about podcasting. I set this up so we can talk for 30 minutes, and we are just about to hit 60.
Yeah, exactly.
And we've been talking for longer than that.
That's right.
All right, Dean, thanks so much. You've been an incredible wealth of information, and I really hope we can get you back on the show again. Thanks again.
You bet. All right, great. Thank you.
So this episode is also on our youtube.com/GolfSmarterTV channel, but it's not just the audio. We recorded the video of this conversation that includes Dean talking about the swing coach while I'm holding it up. And, okay, I'll admit that there's actually a missing segment from this episode. At one point near the end, Dean asked me to send him video of my swing with the swing coach. So coming up in our next episode, Dean will come back and let us hear what he had to say about my swing video, and we'll learn a lot more about how the swing coach will give you greater consistency, improved accuracy, and more distance. Why, you may ask, are we spending so much time on this new and effective swing fixer? Not a trainer, a fixer? Well, that's because I want you to have one. So here's what we're going to do. Dean has talked to the swing coach company about us, and they've agreed to give away four, not one, four of these clubs to Golf Smarter listeners. We're going to announce two winners on the episode of November 21st, and then we'll go another 3 weeks and announce our final two winners on December 12th. So you have more than one chance to win on more than one date, okay? So if you register once and you don't get called, register the second time. Winners will also get a chance to send video of their swing coach swing to Dean for his analysis, which was incredibly generous of him. So click on the link in today's show notes or go to golfsmarter.com and click on the swing coach banner. There you'll be able to register to win. No purchase necessary. But if you, like me, never win anything, but want the swing coach right now, then go to www.swingcoach.com. I never say www, but actually this one is necessary for this website. www.swingcoach.com and save 20% on your order with the checkout code GOLFSMARTER. So whether you win one or you buy one with the checkout code GOLFSMARTER, you're going to save money and improve your swing. Sign up now to win at GOLFSMARTER.com. This episode is brought to you by Leadberry. For those who spend too much time driving around in search for the perfect button-down shirt that fits right, isn't baggy, and doesn't look cheap. You've had that happen, right? You need a new shirt. You go from department store to outlet malls and even those places that have last year's styles at reduced prices. Then you bring it home and decide it's ugly and it doesn't fit right. Stop. I want you to go to leadberry.com/golfsmarter and be amazed at the selection of European quality shirts that won't cost you a premium price. And beyond price, you get fabrics that are sourced in Italy, a selection of high quality sports coats, pants, sweaters, and ties, and shirts, and first rate customer service. Maybe that's the problem when you shop at brick and mortar store after store after store after store. Besides spending all the time shopping when you could be playing golf, there's no one who knows what they're talking about to help you out at these stores. Well, that's not going to happen when you shop online at leadberry.com. If you need help, you're not going to get an overseas call center. The expert stylists at Leadberry know their products, what's in style, what's appropriate to wear at different occasions, and how to make sure you get the fit that looks like it was tailor-made just for you. That's probably why Leadberry has received 1,000 five-star reviews. So visit leadberry.com/golfsmarter today and use the checkout code GOLFSMARTER at checkout to get 20% off your first order. Leadberry is L-E-D, as in David, B as in boy, U-R-Y, leadberry.com/golfsmarter, or simply click on the link in today's show notes. Hey, I want to thank CBN Chicago, Pebble Beach 8, and BJ Loves Golf for submitting Golf Smarter reviews in iTunes and the Apple Podcasts app. You know, you guys are eligible to get a free book, right? Write to me and we'll get one out to you ASAP. And if you want to get one of these three books we're offering, just write a review where you get your favorite podcasts and send me an email to let me know. Now, this next announcement doesn't require anything from you, but to listen, and I appreciate that you do. But I thought you'd like to know this. Have you ever heard of Blog Talk Radio? It's actually one of the biggest and most respected platforms in the growing world of podcasting. Well, I was quite flattered and honored to, and I'm happy to announce that they have sought us out and courted us to be part of their family of incredible and popular podcasts. Your current subscription is safe. This transition is going to happen seamlessly in the background, so you won't miss a single episode. It does mean that the Golf Smarter app will no longer be available or functioning. But you probably have more apps on your phone or your tablet that you use anyway, right? Well, what it does mean to you is that I won't be asking for your financial support of Golf Smarter anymore. That ship has sailed. It was an interesting and time-consuming 7-year adventure, but no more. So if you want a show your continued support for this show, and prove to our sponsors that you are the active, loyal listener that I brag about all the time, please support those companies that support Golf Smarter, and we'll continue to publish new episodes for a long time to come. And you can find us Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Connect with us at Golf Smarter. And if you have any questions, comments, or ideas for new guests, click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.